Bet Belmont, Churchill, and your favorite tracks this weekend with Naira Bets. New players who sign up for Naira Bets today can get a free $25 bet with promo code REWIND25. Join now at NairaBets.com or download the Naira Bets app and make sure you use the promo code REWIND25 for your free $25 bet. Welcome to episode 62 of Red Bull Rewind. My name is Spencer Logan-Buell, and today my special guest is one of the co-founding members of the Daily Gallop, John Piasek. He is also an editor for Denonymous Racing when that website was going as well. We're going over three races today from one of John's favorite tracks, Laurel Park, the Maryland Million Day card to be exact from last Saturday. And some angles we talked about are why deep closers can be bad bets on the win end, and what top jockey trainer combo has been really solid at Laurel Park so far this year. This is Red Board Rewind. It's the same old story. And now I'd like to welcome in my special guest, John Piasek of the Daily Gallop, Denonymous, wonderful editor, good friend of mine. John, how are you today?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me on.
100%. Absolutely. Been looking to have you on. No Maryland Millions, one of your favorite days. What makes Maryland such a key hotspot for you, just in general, to, you know, want to push Maryland racing and show people how good of a track it can be?
Well, I went to college at Loyola, Maryland, in Baltimore, about 15 minutes away from Pimlico, and about 35 from Laurel. It's definitely a state on the upswing. Handle there over the past 10 years has gone up about 87% from 2009 to 2019. The breeding industry there is on the upswing. A lot of pretty good Maryland breeds have emerged over the past few years. And it's a state in which you can tell they put a lot of time and effort into making a good quality product. And it shows. It's a very underrated surrogate. They had a lot of great cars there over the summer, and at the fall meet at Laurel as well. Been some pretty good racing, and I just think it's a hidden gem of the East Coast, and it's a huge building block and centerpiece of East Coast racing.
So for me, you obviously, I got my start with Scott Shapiro's website. You had a little bit of a different start, I believe, with Dan Tord from the Anonymous site being his editor at one point and going for a couple of years till me and you kind of decided to branch off and start the Daily Gallop. Just kind of tell me how your career in that kind of venue of the racing has gone so far.
Well, a long time ago, I had started up my own blog about Monmouth Park. It got the attention of Frank Vespi, who runs the racingbiz.com, and then I started writing for him. And that got the attention of Dan Tordman of America's Best Racing, who at the time had AnonymousRacing.com. I wrote for him for about a year or so, and then he asked me to take over his site, and that was in the fall of 2016, about 4 years ago now, which is kind of weird to think about. And I ran that for about 2 years and change, had a lot of fun doing it. It was a lot of fan-generated content, kind of like what's on the Daily Gallop now, is people would send in their columns, talk about the racing, talk about anything that they wanted to in racing, handicapping, any stories that they wanted to tell. They would be shared, and I did my own columns. I wrote about Laurel Park and Pimlico for a very long time. They did a lot of Monmouth stuff as well. And I remember in the winter of, I guess it was 2015, Dan asked me if I wanted to do Aqueduct or Laurel. And that was at the time when the racing in Maryland had become very good again. It had been in the doldrums for a little bit. Now it was on the upswing. And not too many people were recognizing how good it was. Whereas everybody pays attention to Aqueduct all the time. And I told him, you know, I'd love to write about Laurel Park, and he's like, great. So I did that for a while. Since May of this year, I've been the full-time Maryland handicapper on the racingbiz.com, and you can see my picks on the Laurel Park feed under the Racing Biz banner every day.
Those picks are also free, I'm guessing, as well, just like stuff we have on the Daily Gallop, correct?
Yep, it's on the racingbiz.com. It's under Laurel Park Picks and Pondering, and you can find my top four picks in every race, and a brief blurb about each horse.
something too that I find interesting is just the way you kind of do your process. I wouldn't say it's different from everyone else, but I just have always been intrigued by how you talk about your process. So why don't you tell us a little bit about it right now?
Well, I am mostly a figure handicapper. I use a lot of speed figures and also a lot of pace figures. I found pace figures over, especially the past year, 2 years, have become a pretty central part of my handicapping. Because when I handicap, I like to try to envision how the race is going to develop. And not only that, who's going to be able to maintain the energy throughout the race. Because you can have a horse who's low in speed, but if they tend to stop in the last quarter mile, no matter what, it's not going to do a whole lot of good. In the same vein, there's a lot of horses who have good closing kicks, but they also have no early speed whatsoever, and we'll get to that in a little bit when talking about the Maryland Million races. And those are horses I also don't like to bet. I'll go through each race, I'll look at the speed figure part, and I'll try to see who has met or eclipsed that mark in the last 3-4 races. And right there, that'll tell me who can run well enough to win this race. And that kind of gives me my 5 contenders. And from there, I'll have to look more in-depth. Is it a good trainer-jockey combo? Does this trainer do well in certain spots? What are their pace figures? How do they run? Do they make good middle moves? Do they come from far behind? And also, for distance also plays a big factor as well. Like at Laurel Park, the 1 mile on dirt is a very long stretch. It's more than a quarter of a mile from the top of the stretch to the finish line. So in those kind of races, I give the edge to horses who have better late pace figures, even if they haven't been getting the job done in 6.5 furlong or 7 furlong races, because I know they'll have that extra quarter mile to make up ground. And horses who do make big moves at the top of the stretch going a mile can flatten out in those races. Big moves at the top of the stretch kind of flatten out in those races.
I think it's interesting you bring that up. Obviously, you know, in the winter, a lot of people play fairgrounds. They call it the longest stretch in America. And you always see, you know, there's always horses gobbling up ground at the end. I think it's interesting that you can find that for specific distances at Laurel. Talk to me about some of your favorite angles. Obviously, you know, people like first-time Lasix. They like, you know, going turf to dirt. What are some that have been profitable for you over the last couple of years?
Well, right now at Laurel, the top angle is any horse who is trained by Claudio Gonzalez and ridden by Angel Cruz. If you thought back in the day like Bill Mott and Jerry Bailey or Chad Brown and Javier Castellano or Todd Pletcher and John Velasquez were a good combination, that's what Angel and Claudio are right now at Laurel. They're hitting at about 31% when they team up. And so pretty much any time I see a horse trained by Claudio and ridden by Angel, I'll have to give them notice, especially over the past few months. Because Angel Cruz had a pretty slow start to the Laurel summer meet, and he was not riding first call for Claudio. After July, he jumped on board, and his business really started picking up. Generally, in dirt races at Laurel that are going about 5.5-6 furlongs, I'll lean toward horses who have early speed. Especially at Laurel, I mean, obviously speed is a big angle sprinting at any track, but at Laurel, it's very helpful. I have found that the longer the races get, the importance of early speed tends to diminish a lot more so than it does at other tracks. In general handicapping angles, I have found I am not big in maiden races on playing first-time starters, especially older first-time starters. They almost never win, and they usually sucker bets. Once in a while, a horse who's a 3-year-old or 4-year-old first-time starter will pop up and win, but in the long term, it's a bad angle. In maiden races, the kind of horses I like to play, and I'll say this in my column all the time if you read it, are horses who have made about 2 or 3 starts and have shown some kind of ability in any of them. Like, if there's an 0-for-9 maiden, even if he has a top pace or top speed figures, I'm not going to play them, especially if they're at low odds, because those are the kind of favorites who are very, very vulnerable. Similar angles apply in other races. If I see a $5,000 Noms of 2 claiming race, for example, and I see a horse has lost that level 8 times in a row, I would not touch them at the 10-foot pole, because they've had a million tries at this level. At least one of those fields has probably been about the same quality as this one, probably against a lot of the same horses. So I would not want to bet a horse like that.
For me too, John, coming out of, you know, I seem to love the maiden races as well, and you talked about not taking first-time starters that are older and such. I feel like when that horse does end up winning, though, and everyone, you know, seems to complain, oh, the horse obviously is probably 25-30 to 1, and they don't realize that, you know, this is the first in 20 maiden races at Naira or Laurel where a horse like this wins. And, I mean, that's 19 other races where this obviously isn't happening, and people just seem to always remember the one time that it does happen and make a pretty big stink about it.
Well, that's a good example of why you have to play a long game in handicapping. Using small sample sizes can come back to bite you. So if you have noticed a trend, such as horses in maiden races or horses who show speed do well, just stick with that angle, because there will be times, once or twice, once you get burned, but in the long term, much better off.
Why don't you and me jump into these three wonderful races from Maryland Million Day? We're kind of going to do, it's not the late pick three, but it's kind of the last three big stake races. We're going to start off with race number 9. It was the Maryland Million Turf going 1 1/8 miles on the turf course. What was kind of your preview of the race here, John?
Well, I know there's one low-priced horse in there who I did not like whatsoever, and that was number 4, Mr. D'Angelo, who won this race last year. He made a huge closing rally, 1 by 1 3/4 lengths, going away. He had raced 3 times this year at Laurel over the summer meet. All 3 times, he fell way behind. He made these big rallies, and he kept losing. And all 3 times, he went off at 4-1 or less. And as I had noted earlier, horses who are stone-cold closers like that, who don't have any early speed whatsoever, I'm not too big a fan of betting them. The only exception is if I know the pace is going to be so fast, and everybody is such a one-dimensional speed horse that it is certain they'll all be coming back to the field. That was not the case here. There's some pretty high-quality speed or stalking horses in this race. Mr. D'Angelo went off at 7-2 on Maryland Million Turf. I thought that was pretty crazy price, and I said in my Racing Biz podcast, I had done one last week, I said he'd probably give his backers a big thrill at the top of the stretch, and then not get the job done, and it turns out that's exactly what happened. The horses I liked in here were Nick Papagiorgio and Cannon's Roar, who had actually dead-heated for the win in their last 2 starts. Nick Papagiorgio, another good trainer-jockey combo here, Jamie Ness and Trevor McCarthy. Trevor is the best jockey in Maryland by a pretty good margin, and that is, by the way, another angle I'd like to bring up anytime. You have a Trevor horse in Maryland, automatically have to respect them. And he had run some good races against Maryland Reds and good allowance horses earlier in the year. Back on July 11th, in his last grass start at this track, he stalked the pace, got out to win against a Maryland Red allowance field not dissimilar from the one he faced last Saturday. He had shown early speed. He had shown the ability to stalk the pace. Thought he had a pretty good shot, and he ended up going off as 8-5 favorite. Cannon's Roar at 5-2, I thought, was a value play of the field. Once upon a time, he was a chronic knowledge of 2 claimer, but he's really come into his own in his last few starts. He had won 3 straight, 2 against Open Company, including his dead heat against Nick Papagiorgio back at Pimlico on September 25th. He was another one who has both early speed and great late pace figures. On the Versnet scale, his late pace figures were always in the mid-upper 90s. He looked like the kind who would get a good trip and stalk the pace and then pop on by. And at 5-2, I thought he was the best bet in that field.
You had talked about one Jamie Ness horse. I'm going to talk about the other one. Some Kind of Magician is one that I just thought, who seemed to be in razor-sharp form. But when I see 9 seconds and thirds compared to 3 wins out of 26 starts, that's just a horse to me that, this one wasn't at a short price, ended up going off at 7-1, but just one that with the high trainer stats and everything, and usually these type of horses will take money, I thought him being cold on the board at 7-1, this horse to me just seemed like one that if he's going to hit the board at all, he would be underneath.
He was pretty dead on the board. He had one big win at Parks, but he was up 1-5. He won by 6. It was not a great field that day, so I thought he kind of junked that race. And Jamie Rodriguez, he had a pretty good meet up at Delaware Park. He was one of their top jockeys, and he is very good when riding for Jamie Ness, but he has not had much experience at Laurel Park this year, because this year, jockeys who rode at Delaware after, I think, early mid-July, they could not go to Laurel. They had to stay at Delaware. And now that that Delaware meet is over, there are a few jockeys from there who have been getting mounts at Laurel. And I find them to be at a disadvantage because they just don't know the track as well. So it was very possible, if not likely, that he might mistime a move and leave himself up against it.
I will say this. I was with Nick Papagiorgio over Cannon's Roar in this race for a couple things. Usually when horses at this kind of level, the lower the quote-unquote B-tier of racing, when you see, you know, 8 for 22, but the 8 wins supersede the 5 seconds and 2/3, this type of horse likes to win. Jamie had him in the past with Trevor. They were winning back then. Obviously, the race 2 and 3 back being on the dirt, and kind of toss those out, even though he won one and was second by a nose. Horse has always been the favorite, so that kind of gets a little bit dicey. The main reason I was kind of against Cannon's Roar was he gets back-to-back top buyers. He's been improving 4 straight starts. And usually it's different. Usually dirt, it means a lot more. I was a little bit nervous of a bounce here, even though on turf they kind of usually stay pretty close together. Like you had said with the dead heat, that's a big win on turf when you can win by 3 lengths. And even when you're dead heating, usually you see a lot more turf racing, you know, be within a length and a half.
This is true. And I will say one thing about him is that figure last out, also on the business scale, it's a lifetime top. It's a big outlier, but he had also been running good figures last year on grass. Mm-hmm. Back on September 28th in his prep in 2019, Maryland Million Tope, he lost by 3 posts of length and a very short Grisnet figure of 87, and that was a lifetime top. In that Maryland Million Tope last year, he had a rough break and never really got into stride. I figured that if he could break cleanly here, he would be in much better shape.
What did you end up doing from a wagering perspective here, John?
I ended up playing Cannon's Roar to win, and I played a few pick threes using only Nick Papagiorgio and Cannon's Roar.
For me, it was Nick Papagiorgio. Pretty big win bet for me. Let's see who can win the Maryland Million Turf right now.
Maryland Million Turf. Cannon's Roar hop to the air just slightly at the start, is toward the back of the pack. Inside is Rising Perry, Seville, Railbroke, Sharp, it settles. Nick Papagiorgio is right up there, and Seville Barber showing speed, too. Inside, Seville Row is now in fourth, and Tommy Shelby is next in fifth position of the turn run. Noble Addiction in between horses racing in sixth as they round that turn. Taxable Goods, the one widest of them all. Cannon's Roar racing to the back of the pack with Some Kind of Magician. Back to Benny Havens. Mr. D'Angelo, as usual, no early speed. Got to be 18 off the front with pretty good year on his outside, heading into the turn now the backstretch run, and leading the way with 5.5 furlongs left to go, it's Rising Perry from Seville Barber by a measured length and a half or so, and Seville Row trying to push through down to the inside. Nick Papagiorgio's in between horses. Cannon's Roar is making a move in between horses and a bit of traffic there, and Taxable Goods racing on the outside, first 6 bunched up by only about 4 lengths, and Benny Havens follows that group, and back to Noble Addiction, and they're followed by Some Kind of Magician to the outside, 3 wide around the turn, and Pretty Good Year, and Mr. D'Angelo now passing a tiring Tommy Shelby into the far turn. Tommy Shelby is the back of the pack now, but now on the outside they're making a big move. Benny Havens just made a big looping move on the outside. Benny Havens rolled past Nick Papagiorgio. His Pretty Good Year moves up in third position, and Cannon's Roar is fourth and battling on the inside. Mr. D'Angelo is out in the center of the track. Into the stretch now, 3/16 of a mile left to go. And here's Pretty Good Year surging up on the outside. Cannon's Roar, Nick Papagiorgio, game as ever in between horses. But Pretty Good Year has the momentum now. And it is a Pretty Good Year, Pretty Good Year in front from Cannon's Roar to win it by a length.
And the number 10, Pretty Good Year, gets it done, paying $32 with a buyer of 89. This is a horse we didn't talk about. Ended up going off at 15-1 off the 8-1 warning line. I think when we talk so much about Cannon's Roar and Nick Papagiorgio, who ended up finishing second and third, when you look at Pretty Good Year, he ran this race last year and ran a solid third. He was way out of it, but hasn't really been on the turf since then. And that 79 fits in real good against these lower 80 buyers. And the price was just astronomically more here.
Yeah, I mean, at 15-1, he was a very good value. I was not sure about his chances to win, as he had not been on the grass in a while. And I looked at his 2 grass races prior to the Maryland Million Tope last year, and he lost both of those, lost both of them to horses that are in here, similar types, he just had not been able to get the job done. So I thought he was going to be I'm kind of up against it. On top of the fact that he is another horse who keeps knocking on the door and not being able to win. The only win he had this year was against numbers of one other than allowance horses on dirt back on February 8th, a race where he got an excellent trip. He stalked the pace off a very fast second quarter, got by and won by 2.5 lengths. Since then, he's been another type who sits mid-pack, makes what looks like a good move, and then just can't get the job done. And I had thought the same thing was going to happen here.
Kanzor and Nick Papagiorgio both also improved their buyer, 83 to an 87 for Kanzor, 83 to an 85 for Nick Papagiorgio. It's just that kind of race where you were kind of right and where you thought these horses could improve, and just one kind of improved better than the rest of them.
I mean, I really thought neither Nick Papagiorgio nor Kanzor had much of an excuse, especially not Kanzor, who got a great trip on the inside, and he angled too wide in the stretch, dropped back over to the inside. And at about the 3/16 pole, I thought both Nick Papagiorgio and Kanzor, I thought it could have been a repeat of their last start. Both of them looked like they were moving well at the top of the stretch. But pretty good year. Made that four-wide move and got up to win.
Any horses in here that you think are bet backs or just going to be interesting in different spots going forward?
Well, I'm not sure how much longer grass racing is going to be in Maryland. So we could see a lot of these horses back on dirt, and both Nick Papagiorgio and Pretty Good You have great dirt form, so it's likely that we'll see them pop up in an allowance or two sometime in the next few weeks. I think Pretty Good You, if he does show up in an allowance, might get overbet off that big win. People are going to ignore that on dirt, his form just has not been able to get the job done. He's going to merit respect. Not quite sure if he can win. And as an aside on Pretty Good Year, Sheldon Russell did get back aboard. Sheldon had a big day on Saturday, so if you were playing jockeys at 15-1, that might have been an angle worth looking at. Nick Papagiorgio, I imagine, is also going to be back on dirt next time out, whether that's at Lowell or at Penn National or Park, remains to be seen. Jimmy Ness likes to go all over the place with his horses on the East Coast. He's also a very good dirt horse. He won by a head on dirt two starts back and then just missed against Amen Corner in the race prior. A very solid horse on the circuit, he is. So I think both of them on dirt or grass are worth a look.
Let's jump in to our next race, race number 10, the Merrill Millions Sprint, going 6 furlongs on the dirt. You know me, John. I love those 6 furlong, get the tires right and burn them down. Just horses that love to go the 22 and 44 and just show how fast they can really be. What did you end up liking in here?
Well, this race is kind of a painful one to go over. The horse I picked on top on the Racing Biz was One More Great Time, even though I thought many of them had a case in here. He faced much, much better in his last start in Apollonesia. The top three finishers were Eastern Bay and Lockie. The top two also in the Francis Dash next time out. And three is over Deuces, who came back to win his next start. A stakes at Delaware Park and is a very good sprinter on the East Coast. Nobody in this field is as good as those three. I thought he was getting a big drop in class. And not only that, he had been in what are technically allowance races over the summer. Those allowances were basically stakes. I mean, there were horses in there who could have fitted very well in a stakes at other tracks, like Parks, Monmouth. Even at Saratoga, they would have been contenders. He had made good moves every time. I thought he was going to have a big shot to win it. Brilliant Chase and Let's Play 9, I also took a long look at. Brilliant Chase, coming off a big win at Parks last time, he broke slowly, got thrown out of his element, stalked the pace, and drew off to win by an impressive 4 1/4 lengths against Pennsylvania Breds, being Maryland's sire. He is still Maryland eligible. He is a young three-year-old. He just broke his maiden a few starts back. It looked like he was rounding into form at the right time. Let's Play 9 was very intriguing. It's basically, liking him takes a lot of trust in both the trainer and jockey. Mike Trombetta, very good local trainer. Sheriff McCarthy, very good local jockey. Over the winter, he had won 3 out of 4, including a narrow win against Maryland Reds last time out. Unfortunately, last time out for him was on March 13th. He had been working out well since. He had speed from the outside, and his best bet was that Trevor was going to send. And the horse I picked second was Karen's Notion, who impressed me a lot, breaking his maiden back in July. He won by 13 lengths in a $40,000 maiden claiming. That's not something that you see very often. Unfortunately, he hadn't really moved forward off of that race. He had won once against Maryland Reds, stalking the pace, but he had three races where he got more or less the setup you'd expect, couldn't quite get a job done.
For me, I think looking at Let's Play 9 was kind of the horse I wanted out of all the contenders for me. Trevor McCarthy, as we had said, top rider. Trombetta knows how to get a horse off the layoff, and especially because this horse had won. I understand it was maiden 40 claimers, but the horse had won off of the debut, so I thought maybe the layoff wasn't so bad. Not so much the Bullet 36-3, but the 59 before that out of the gate just sensed to me that this horse was going to have everything form-wise. This horse was not going to come in short. Obviously, you're trying to come in short for a stake race. Some other horses, like you had said, One More Great Time coming out of those great races, seemed to me like possibly an in and outer. I just wrote 90 question mark up at the top. Maybe this horse could run back into a 90, and if that happens, this horse was going to be very difficult. What about wagering in this race, John? What did you look for in that?
I thought that One More Great Time, not a good bet at 9-5. On the other hand, Brilliant Chase at 7-1, I thought was the value of the field. I ended up using Brilliant Chase to win, actually 8-1 on Brilliant Chase, apologies there. I ended up having a lot of wagers centered around Brilliant Chase and One More Great Time.
For me, it was Let's Play 9 going off at 3-1. Thought could be interesting value. I just bet across the board. Let's see who wins the Maryland Million Sprint right now.
Off of the Maryland Million Sprint, Karen's Notion sharp beginning right to the front from One More Great Time, and Whiskey and You moving up on the inside would Baptize the Boy. Baptize the Boy now in third. Shawnee P is in fourth. Let's Play 9 racing in fifth, and Lewis Field in four. The Moment racing on the far outside. It's Whiskey and You and Brilliant Chase in the back of the pack with Hall Pass, who is last in some 10 to 11 lengths off the pace up ahead. Karen's Notion, One More Great Time, tight Baptize the Boy, shuffle back in third position heading into the turn. Lewis Field and Shawnee P, they're head to head, 5.5 lengths from the front, and for the moment deepest out. And the inside is Brilliant Chase. Let's Play 9 with a couple beaten now. It's Whiskey and You, and Hall Pass still with plenty to do, trailing the field. Karen's Notion to the top of the stretch from One More Great Time leads it about a length or so. Baptize the Boy moving the inside now, trying to come back for a little more. Lewis Field on the far outside, the green blinkers. Lewis Field coming with a run. Baptize the Boy is running a big race after getting shuffled back, but Karen's Notion's hanging in there. Karen's Notion, here's Baptize the Boy on the inside. Karen's Notion, Baptize the Boy down on the rail. Karen's Notion, Baptize the Boy. Karen's Notion all the way to win from Baptize the Boy. Lewis Field was next in One More Great Time. Hall Pass to the back of the pack, and Brilliant Chase closer for that spot in a minute 9.15 in the sprint.
And the number 8, Karen's Notion, gets it done, paying 34.20 with the 89 buyer. Thoughts on the winner, John? You had her second.
I did have him second, but I didn't use him in anything. And watching that race, I thought that he was going to fade. Turns out he never faded. He ran back to his maiden win and looked quite good while doing it. If you bet Let's Play 9, you probably knew about 5 seconds in that you were in trouble. He had been on or near the pace in every start. This time he was fifth at the opening quarter. He was three wide. He never really tried to contest Karen's Notion up top. And from that moment on, if he's that far out of his element, that's a big red flag. Really no excuse for One More Great Time. He got a perfect trip stalking this leader. At about the 3/8 point, it looked like all that had to be done was push the button and he'd go by Karen's Notion. He just flattened out badly, turning to home. And give credit to Karen's Notion, because he had been coming close against Maryland Reds and Open Company in his past two starts. Had a very strong half mile in 45.07 at Laurel Park. Had a very fast half mile. And he just kept on going and got the job done. Baptized the Boy for Claudio, did get up, get second at 22-1. He was ridden by Alex Crispin, who may not be a big name to people who just play Maryland racing, but he had an excellent meet at Delaware Park and actually, in my opinion, put himself in the conversation for the Eclipse Award for Apprentice Jockey. He got a great ground-saving trip and got up for second. The ever-classy Lewis Field came in third. One more great time flattened out fourth. Brilliant Chase was a complete non-factor in this race. He just might not be ready. He was still a little bit green, and the class just may not be there for him yet. But I think at 8-1, he was a fine play. And Let's Play 9 did nothing and came in last. But next time out against maybe a softer field of Lions horses with a race under his belt, maybe he'll sneak through the cracks and go off at a good price. We'll see.
I think, too, with Let's Play 9, obviously, like you said, not getting up to the lead. I think with those types of horses, you really have to be logical when you're handicapping and not just like, oh, the horse finished dead last, not play him. If a horse is a need-the-lead type and you're looking in your time form, pace projections, or anything like that, and you say, oh, this horse is going to be third or fourth, then maybe just put an asterisk next to the start and be like, okay, probably won't run well, might hit the board or, you know, get a piece, but isn't really a win contender. And then the next time out, when you know you've already scratched that race out, okay, if I look back and he seems to be like, maybe he'll be a lonely leader or possibly get, you know, be second, he'll have a much better chance. And everyone's going to look at that last running line, you know, dead last, and say, okay, maybe this horse is going off form. No, he just didn't get the right pace set up at all.
Right. Had a bad pace, first start in a long time. I believe he fits nominees of two other than in Maryland now. Those can be pretty tough races, but I think he could get a good setup. And if he draws the inside, he could be a contender.
Let's jump into the last race of this podcast, race number 11. It was the Maryland Million Classic, 1 1/8 miles on the dirt. Obviously, one of the top horses I thought for sure was Harper's First Ride, coming off that grade 3 win. Although there are other horses, maybe not grade 3 winners, but dual grade 3 placed in this field.
Well, I thought Harper's First Ride and Top Line Growth pretty much interchangeable. Harper's First Ride, after his last start, I had thought maybe they'd think about the Breeders' Cup. As it turns out, they did not. He was in here. After a very sharp win last out at Pimlico in Pimlico Special. And that race where he won a 5-1. That was a good example of why playing local jockeys isn't always a detriment in these kind of races. Angel Cruz noted that the track had been speed favoring that day at Pimlico. It was a race without early speed. And he put his horse on the top end and he fended off Owendale for a two-length win. Prior to that, he had a good trip in Puted Testimony back on September 5th, stalked the pace, dropped to win by 3¼ lengths. He loves Laurel Park. Going into this race, he had his 6 wins in 7 starts. On the surface, as noted earlier, Cruz and Claudio, a very good trainer jockey combo. Top Line Growth, I thought, also had a big chance in here. He was a perfect 4 wins in 4 starts at this track, a track record holder over this track. He had never lost here by less than 3¾ lengths. He also looked like he would stalk the pace and get up. He was coming out of a pretty salty race last time in the Salvatore Mile at Monmouth. It was his second race off a long layoff. He came in second to Pirate's Punch, who is a pretty good horse. No shame in losing to him. First start off the layoff back on August 14th. Top Line Growth won by 5½ lengths against a pretty good nominee of 3 other than field. Here at Laurel, in a big Brisnet figure of 101, not too far off from his top, and I figured if he could take a step forward off of that, the sky was going to be the limit. Harper's First Ride and ended up going off at 4-5. Top Line Growth was 2-1. I thought Harper's First Ride, a big underlay in this field, and he was 1-2, 3-5 for a lot of the betting, ended up floating up late. Top Line Growth, 7-2, 4-1. A lot of the time, ended up going off at 2-1. I thought 2-1 was pretty square on Top Line Growth, and I ended up betting him, especially because a horse who I thought didn't have a chance at all, Cordmaker, was getting a lot of action. Now, Cordmaker is a very popular horse with the local fans. He's won 6 times here. He won the Governor's Day Handicap last year at Delaware, along with the Polynesian. This year, though, at age 5, he really hadn't shown good form. He kept making big moves and flattening out. Last time he was 3rd in the Pimlico Special. He was a clear-cut 2nd in the testimony. He got outkicked by Harper's First Ride in that race. He hadn't been doing much against allowance horses earlier in the year, and at 5-1, I thought he was just sucking up a lot of money, and that made Top Line Growth a lot better bet.
I think for me, just like you'd very much talked about it, Harper's First Ride, last 3 races, super solid win, 2 wins in a 2nd, just improving the buyer, 86, 96, 101. There is that, you know, there is the buyer study where after three races, it's very hard to get that fourth buyer to improve again. But technically, he doesn't have to improve. He could run right around that 96 and make it a little bit closer. But I still think this horse was going to be a solid use. At 4-5, he was not, so I ended up passing on the race. But like you said, the jockey-trainer combo, everything kind of led to this horse. And 4-5 was probably where he's supposed to be in this race. But there were others that could be dangerous. What did you do from a wagering style here?
I mean, I thought I picked Hopeless First Ride on top in my racing business analysis, but I thought that Hopeless First Ride and Top Line Growth had very similar chances of winning. They're similar quality horses, and I thought that at 2-1, Top Line Growth was the play.
Let's see who wins the Maryland Million right now.
For the Maryland Million Classic. Brindimi, like a shot out of the gate in Harper's First Ride, and Monday Morning Quarterback bobble just a bit at the beginning, but now moving forward with speed and Top Line Growth is deep out of the turn, racing in third position. Around that turn, Brindimi's the speed from Monday Morning Quarterback, who leads by half length as Brindimi, and his Top Line Growth in third, and Cord Maker Rail in fourth. Harper's First Ride, racing back of the pack today with Tattoo to the inside, and trailing the field is Tap the Mark. Brindimi is the pacemaker in the Classic, leads at a half length from Monday Morning Quarterback in second, another three. Cord Maker, Top Line Growth. They're headed head for third early on as they pass that six for a long mark. Harper's First Ride races some seven lengths of the pace and Tattoo to the inside and Tap the Mark trailing the field. Five furlongs from the line now. Pace has been on a stout front. Prendimi, Monday Morning Quarterback, as Tattooed gets a rail run and gets through on the inside of Cord Maker. Top Line Growth is racing in fifth, and Tattooed's going to make a go for the lead right now along with Monday Morning Quarterback. So Monday Morning Quarterback and Tattooed up on the inside moves to second as they round that far turn. Then it's Pandemi back in third off the inside. And Top Line Growth and Cord Maker. Harper's First Ride has to come wide. Wide, wide, Harper's First Ride. Widest of them all, five or six deep, begins to roll and Tap the Mark just in behind that group. Top of the stretch was Monday Morning Quarterback showing the way from Tattooed and Harper's First Ride on the outside trying to rev up with that stretch run. 3/16 of a mile left to go. Monday Morning Quarterback in front from Tattooed. Harper's First right of the outside. Furlong left to go. Monday Morning Quarterback leads the way and holding sway. Monday Morning Quarterback with a three-length lead. Harper's First Ride took a bold run on the turn. Tattooed back in third. Monday Morning Quarterback and Sheldon Russell with his fourth win of the day. No second guessing that ride. A Monday Morning Quarterback.
And a horse we didn't talk about, number three, Monday Morning QB, paying $15.60 with a 96 buyer, improved off that Federico Tessio. And just, I think this goes to show you, when a trainer for some random reason puts a horse on the turf, maybe it's, you know, just that in-between race where they don't know where to run them and they run them on the turf. It was yielding. It was just the race that just didn't seem to fit him at all. And then he improved off that Federico Tessio by another 4 points to win this race.
That was a big race that he ran in the Tessio. He set the pace, ended up tiring out, came in second, behind Happy Saver, who, as we know, went on to win the Jockey Club Gold Cup at Belmont. Monday Morning Quarterback ran a lifetime position at top in that race and was nine lengths clear of third-place finisher Big City Bob. As I was saying to you earlier, I don't know why this horse was not in Preakness. Not that he had much of a chance there, but he had a lot better shot there than on the grass, where he was a completely non-threatening 11th after showing brief speed. He was lightly raced. He was ridden by Sheldon Russell, who, as we all know, had a big day on Saturday. And he also made some history in this race. He was the first three-year-old ever to win the Maryland Million Classic, which is a nice little feather in his cap. I thought 6-1 was fine on him. I picked him third in my analysis. I just thought a not dissimilar thing to Let's Play 9, in which he has a lot of ability and brilliant chase too, in which he has a lot of ability, but he might not quite be ready for prime time. As it turns out, he was.
I think too, when you just look at overall, now that you relook at the races, which, you know, hopefully more and more people due to this podcast are doing, let's see who he's raced against. New York Traffic, Kentucky Derby horse. Max Player, Kentucky Derby horse. Happy Saver won the Jockey Club Gold Cup. He won those other two races. And then he faced a decent horse in Don Juan Kitten on the turf that now I'm just starting to think might have just been the prep in between. Robert Reed, 25%, only 12 starters, so it is a small sample size, but 3-for-12, that's kind of good. You know, I was trying, you know, you want to make sure there's like four or five wins in that sample that shows that the trainer kind of gets it done multiple times, not just with one type of horse, etc. I just think that this horse, when you look back at it, I was talking about with David Aragona on an earlier podcast, same with Mr. Buff, how Mr. Buff paid $940 is something that I can't even fathom in my mind right now. Harper's first ride, I think the three races was just a little bit too much. The 86 to 96 and the small improvement to the 101 comes back down to earth with the 91 buyer. What were your thoughts on Tattooed at 45-1 in a big price running third?
Well, I mean, I barely even thought about him going into the races, if being quite honest. He's a horse who was a lot like Mr. D'Angelo earlier in the day, in which he has no really speed. He makes these good rallies, and he can't quite get there. That being said, I am not a trifecta or a superfecta player for the most part, but if you are, he was the kind of horse who you could key in third or fourth and hope something big to happen. And as it turns out, something big did happen. He came in third. Two logical horses came in 1-2, and the trifecta paid $1,170 for 50 cents.
Is Monday Morning QB a type of horse that maybe you think goes, you know, maybe into the Aqueduct? I'm not saying Cigar Mile, but in a stake like that, a kind of, you know, grade 3, grade 2 type race where he can do some damage?
He looks like the kind of horse who for now I would have in those grade 2, grade 3 type of races and try to build on him. As he did beat two very good horses, Harper's First Ride and Top Line Growth, the latter of whom was just completely flat. I don't know what happened there. But it does bring up an interesting point of how people tend to get stars in their eyes with horses and tend to rush them into spots. Like, any time there's a horse who wins even decent allowance, like a Knicks Go or a Reformer, it's like, oh, put them in the Breeders' Cup Classic or put them in the Pegasus. And I'm like, if a horse has just made his first start off a long layoff first or second off a long layoff, it's not a bad idea just to, like, have him slowly acclimate back into lower quality races and then down the road take bigger shots. So what day is the Discovery this year? Do you know?
I am not sure off the top of my head, to be quite honest.
Okay. Only because I was thinking that would be a good spot for him. I think the Highlands Holiday is coming up in a little bit at Gulfstream. That'd be a decent spot for him. But, you know, as long as I don't get too crazy in the first half of the year, he could end up winning some pretty good races.
That is all the time we have for today. John, I appreciate you taking the time to talk some Maryland bred stakes with me. Where can people find you on social media again and tell them all about the Racing Biz one more time?
I am on social media at TheyreOff. I post a lot of opinions. A few of them are good. I have my Maryland Racing column 4 times a week on theracingbiz.com. It's under Laurel Park Picks and Ponderings. I also do a column one day a week. It's called the Mid-Atlantic 3 Stars, and it's talking about the top horses, trainers, and jockeys at Laurel, Charlestown, and Parks.
Thanks so much for coming on, John. Really appreciate it.
It was a pleasure.
Thanks to all of the wonderful listeners and my special guest, John Piasek. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's president is Pierre Thomas Florentel. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. And our In the Money Media business manager is Drew Coatney. I'm Spencer Luganbuehl, and we will see you next time.